Turkey hunting is one of my favorite things. And one of the key tools I use for turkey hunting is the Onyx Hunt Map. I use it incessantly when I'm hunting turkeys. Being able to find a new piece of public or gaining permission on private opens up opportunities for gobblers. Onyx Hunt has a special offer for you this spring. Use the code MEATEATER to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt. You'll find more birds this season. I'm telling you, I rely on Onyx Hunt when I'm hunting turkeys. It is an invaluable turkey hunting tool. Many of you know Axis deer is considered to be the best tasting venison on the planet. I've been hearing that for years. And that those deer cause some ecological harm. Well, Maui Nui Venison is bringing those Axis deer to the market. So you can get some fresh cuts and sticks shipped to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MAUINUI venison.com. Use promo code MEATEATER for 20% off your order.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, everybody. This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming to you recorded from the Llano Estacado or Staked Plains of Texas. We're in a canyon called Ransom Canyon, which is a sweet name, in a rental house that has a lot of personal flourishes of the owner around it. We're down here. We're not gonna talk about why we're down here too much yet, because we're gonna talk about that at another point. Has to do with a big tall bird that tastes real good. Instead, what we're talking about right now is something that I've been troubled by and puzzled over and anguished over my entire life, and that is the purpose and functionality and also some practical business having to do with hunting dogs. And I've always maintained that dudes who hunt with dogs like dogs more than hunting. And I have a couple of dog experts sitting here today, and also Giannis Putellis. You ever owned a dog, Giannis?
Nope.
And also a man who's never even owned a dog.
I got one.
How have you never owned a dog?
We had one growing up, so it was a family dog, so I didn't really own
it. Oh, yeah,
one.
I'm counting that.
And then when I got married, I got a 2-for-1 package. But she was just like a house dog. She was a family dog.
What's it mean to get a 2-for-1 package?
Well, I got a dog with the marriage.
Where's the dog now?
She passed away.
From what?
Old age.
All right, so Giannis lied. He's actually had several dogs. They're all dead now. And we're also joined right now by Ronnie Baim. Who's the main dog guy that I know? Like most of what I know about dogs, besides just dogs I've owned, has come from Ronnie. And Ronnie, I'm gonna have you talk about Ronnie. Like you, Ronnie judges dogs and breeds dogs.
Yeah,
you used to breed these really violent dogs.
Let's not call them violent. Yeah. But anyway,
mean spirited dogs.
I started out like
not pit bulls, but.
When I first moved to Michigan 26-27 years ago, I got a German short hair, and it was a nice dog, and you know, little hyper strong, little goofy, and I didn't know jack shit about training. I couldn't get the dog to sit, but
you wanted it for hunting.
Yeah, and this dog was a good grouse dog and a good woodcock dog, and I took it to South Dakota. But other than that, I got lucky. This dog just like, oh, out of the box. It just did everything.
You mean Zygon?
No, this is Queenie. Long time ago.
I remember that dog.
Yeah, the white and brown.
So that wasn't the violent kind?
No.
No.
And then when I
thought... But it was a pointer.
Yeah, it's a point. All my dogs have been pointing.
You've breeds. Always been into points. Yeah. Like, I want to real quick, hunting dogs occur in what three categories? Let's say you got, just to lay this out basically. You got pointers, retrievers, and trackers. Is that how you categorize hunting dogs?
Well, we call them pointers, flushers, and then there'd be tracking dogs, which would be in the hound group.
Like lion dogs or coon dogs.
Coon dogs, bear dogs.
So pointers, flushers, and trackers.
basically.
It's fair to say.
Yeah, it's fair.
All right. And you've always been into the pointers.
Right.
And that's good because I know Ed's into the...
Flushing breed.
Retrievers.
But as far as a field work, it's a flushing dog. Yeah.
Yeah, but he mainly uses it for it to go pick up dead stuff.
That's true, though. That
Which, and we'll get to this. In my opinion...
Is the that most useful dog you could have.
It's the main thing a dog can do is right. I would leave it in its kennel until I couldn't find something, and I would go home and get it and have it find it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. But anyways.
So anyway,
your dog, you're doing right. like your life through dogs.
I made one of those mistakes. Like I jumped in with both feet and I started reading too many articles and I got a German wire-haired pointer. That dog hated me. It was a good hunter. But it had no cooperation.
This is Zeigen.
No. This is Zeigen. This is way before you met Zeigen. His name was Hasco. He's a black.
I remember that dog.
Black wire hair, which is a little rare at that time. He had all the talent in the world, and I had no skill level to train the obedience. Some dogs, when they're really high desire and really, there's a top shelf dog. It needed to be told who was alpha. It needed a boss.
Yeah.
And
you were man enough to do that.
I can't get my wife to listen to me. I couldn't get this dog to listen to me at all. It was this dog. I took this dog to Canada when he was like 4 or 5 years old to hunt sharp-tailed grouse. And I only shot grouse over my buddy's griffon. My dog hunted like over there and over there and shot retrieved birds for other people. The dog hated me.
That's funny because my hate of hunting dogs, my kind of hate of hunting dogs comes from people telling me throughout my life, this is going back to high school, people being like, oh, I got this great hunting dog. We're going to take my great hunting dog out and we'll go hunting. And you open the door or open the back of the truck and that son of a bitch takes off. And he's like, yeah, I can't contest that he's not a great hunting dog. Who knows what he's doing wherever he is?
Right.
He might be hunting up a storm, but it's not happening around me.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, that's...
And then you spend your whole time trying to get the dog back in the truck.
And hollering at it and blowing a whistle, it's aggravating. You were with me with some of the dogs I had.
I remember some. Yeah, your dogs now are different.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But
so
no,
then you got into the mean ones.
That was the German wire hairs.
Yeah.
And
those dogs are meant for killing.
They're very good at it.
Yeah, like they'll kill a raccoon, whatever.
See, in Germany, when they started the versatile breeds, the wire hair was put together. It was a poodle pointer, which is not a poodle, but it's another wire-haired dog. Stickelhaar, a short hair, and can't remember the other breed. But anyway, there was like four basic breeds put in there, and they wanted a dog that would not only, you know, point a bird, they wanted to track blood. And because everything was privately owned, all the big estates, in Europe, only the wealthy hunted back in the 1800s.
Yeah, and they wanted the dog to kill a poor guy right. if they caught him hunting on their land.
No. The dogs like people. They do. But what they were expected to do, and they still do, and I don't want to say a secret society dog club, I won't mention it, but this breed of dog, if you have one that's still registered in Berlin, it has to kill, before it's allowed to breed, a full-grown raccoon.
Where do they get the raccoons?
By itself?
No help from the owner. No help.
No other dogs.
No, they let the raccoon.
Mano y mano.
They trap a raccoon in a have a hard trap.
And hold on a minute. There's raccoons in Europe?
No, but there's a similar. The point is here.
Hedgehog?
We have, here, no.
Yeah, it's like a little 2-pound stoat that he has to kill.
I think it's a guinea pig. They have to kill a guinea pig. No. What they've done is they've used a raccoon here because that's what we have here.
Mm.
But the point was that dog was expected to get rid of vermin out on these estates.
Oh,
while
I got
it's
you.
Hunting, if they come across a skunk, a polecat, whatever they call them,
anything that's going to eat bird eggs.
Exactly. Yeah. Anything that they basically made this like sterile environment where game birds and game animals, rabbits and game animals would flourish. By that dog, it might have done it. I mean, they'll be running down the woods, going through, looking for grouse and stuff. And all of a sudden, wham, there's a raccoon that was like nested up by a log or a skunk. One bite on the back of the neck, it's done.
Really?
And
that was desirable.
That's what the Germans wanted. Doesn't work so good when you come to America. You go to a farmer, knock on his door, and it takes two of his house or his yard cats out of his barn. You know, and it was his best mousing cat. So, but anyway, so I had this desire to have this headstrong, hard.
Can I ask you a question, though, about the raccoons? That's some hardcore shit, because when we were in Florida pig hunting, we saw a raccoon.
A pack of dogs fighting a raccoon.
Well, that was a pussy dog.
No, these weren't.
Well, we did see one of those dogs get gouged bad by a pig.
But still, yeah. I'm saying that's amazing to hear that they kill,
What I'm saying is, too, remember, there's a lot of German wire hairs in this country.
Yeah.
There's different registries with them. If you stay to this one format, it's called VDD-GNA, and if you stay that format, your dog has to pass certain performance tests before you're allowed to breed the dog. And the dog has to be in front of a breed warden to make sure it's the right height, the right size, the right teeth. If the coat's not right, they'll only let you breed it to a coat that's going to complement it. It's how do I say it? It's like a lot of whiskey two mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they are. And those dogs that I thought I wanted and I stuck with for 15, 18 years, wasn't more than I could handle. But
it was like a penis extension dog.
No, it wasn't my Corvette. It wasn't a Corvette dog or nothing like that. But it was. I thought it'd be cool to have a dog that could do all that, but you didn't realize how nasty they could get sometimes.
Yeah, like you didn't realize what it really meant.
Yeah, like my buddy's dog come off the tailgate. I'm putting a collar on my dog. He does, most dogs sniff ass or at least tiptoe and look at each other before they fight. This dog just jumped off the tailgate and went. And I was like, man, you're so embarrassed. You're like, so anyway. So then that was my predominant breed for the center of my dog years.
And at that time, you were involved with the same organization.
Right. The same organization. It's called NAVDA, North American Versatile Hunting Dog Association.
And Ed, what, we haven't really even introduced Ed Arnett yet, but just real quick, what's the organization you're involved in?
American Kennel Club.
AKC.
AKC.
Oh. Yeah.
As a judge. That's what I'm associated with.
But that's what you, I mean, you sort of measure dogs by that standard.
By the hunt test standard. Yes. Gotcha. But there's also field trials.
Have you heard of, I mean, are you aware of North American Versatile Hunting Dog Association? Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I hunt with a lot of guys that have pointers too, so.
So NAVDA, you're involved in NAVDA now, but you were involved in NAVDA when you had wire hairs.
Right. Even before I became a judge for them, I was involved with them and, tried to learn and glean everything I could from the other trainers and the other breeders and everything. But,
all the dogs that you've talked about, Queenie.
Yeah.
Was a what?
Queenie's a short hair.
Then a German wire hair.
Hasco and Zygon.
Now the new kind of dogs you're tangled up with have all fallen under versatile hunting dogs.
Yeah. Versatile hunting dog is a dog that, if you look it up in a dictionary, it's a dog that's going to hunt and point and do work before and after the shot on land and on water. That's basically the description of it.
Yeah.
So what we want is a dog that will basically perform in any terrain.
Yep.
And if water's a terrain, water's a terrain.
An ATD.
What's that?
All-terrain dog.
I didn't get that.
So real quick, rattle off a handful of species that would be ATDs, and then what kind of dog you're messing around with now.
Well, the most common ones everybody knows of is German Shorthairs, English Pointers, Brittany's, English Setters, Poodle Pointers, Vizslas. A lot of Vizslas getting real popular. Munsterlanders, which is a setter-looking dog from Germany. There's, I think, 22 of them now in our registry in NAVDA, so I can't think of every...
Is a Weimaraner in there?
Weimaraner's in there also.
This gal that used to live down the road, do you remember the Johnson family? Sort of lived across Middle Lake from my sister.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a dog that they named Nipper, a Weimaraner named Nipper, but it would always bite people. And they got to thinking that the reason it bit people is because his dog's name was Nipper, and he was just fulfilling his name. And then they changed his name to Bowser.
Did it help?
I can't remember. But that was a versatile hunting dog, or not.
Yeah, no, it is. Basically, all the European breeds that point are considered versatile hunting dogs.
Yeah.
They're not, over the years, a lot of them become specialist dogs. So they, like an English setter is going to pretty much be your predominant grouse woods dog up in the north. A pointer, we're in Texas, right? And a pointer is going to be a predominant bird down here in Texas.
For quail.
For quail. And because it's a shorter coated dog, it's not going to get hot. You know, it's that would be a predominant. They are still in the versatile category, but for generations, they've been bred as a specialist.
Yeah.
So to take one and transition it into a water dog is a little more difficult than it is for
I follow you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to transition any versatile dog into a water dog, you just take their field desire and push it into the water. They find that the water has the animals in it, just like the field has the animals in it, and they're just excited as hell to go out into a marsh and look for a duck.
But they're probably not equipped to stay warm.
No, that's a fault with them because very few of them have a really good dual coat that will protect them in cold, cold.
Because the lab's like a seal.
Yeah, oh yeah, they'll come out of the water. Look, I don't need a towel. Yeah. Well, we're going to tell.
But I got one last thing for you, though.
Right, yeah.
The dogs you're into now, which is a reasonable dog.
Right.
It's the kind of dog. Does Face Hill still have one?
Yes, they have like three or four of them.
Yeah. I don't lust after women besides my wife, but I just don't. But I go to Las
Vegas.
What about
Tim McGraw?
I go to Las Vegas every year for this thing.
Yeah.
And for the last like 2 years in a row, in all the elevators, there's an ad for a Faith Hill concert.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a it's like such an intoxicating ad campaign. I have no desire whatsoever to go see her in concert. But when I'm standing in the elevator, which is all you do in Las Vegas is ride up and down the elevator. she's always advertising there, and I'm always looking at her thinking about your dog because you told me that she has one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has several. I think it's Tim's more than hers, but some.
Is that why you sell your dogs so fast, like before they even hit the ground out of the bitch?
I bet you hardly anybody knows they have them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, the Bracco people have them, but.
So Ronnie's now tangled up with a dog called a?
Italian Bracco.
Bracco Italiano.
Bracco Italiano, depends on how you want to say it. And it's a very houndy looking dog. It's a very, when people see it, when I'm in Virginia, there's a lot of bear hunters in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
It's like more bear hunters. There's more bear in Virginia than any place I've ever been. And people come and make guests. I was at Prince Wales Island. You're right.
It's got a lot of bears.
A lot of bears. And people will come up to my external dog box and they'll be standing by my tailgate. What kind of bear dog is that? God, I never seen one orange before.
Yeah. You know? And then you got to tell them it's a bear dog.
And I just say Italian pointer because they're like, Bracco, what?
Yeah. You know,
so I leave that out. But it's just it's a versatile dog, but it was really never bred for the versatility in Italy. It was pretty much an upland bird.
Yeah.
But then again, so were most English pointers.
That's a dog you could actually bring into your house without it killing your kids.
Yeah, and it doesn't kill animals. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have that fur drive because the Italians over all these centuries just wanted to hit birds with them.
Yep.
So they use these dogs. I understand. I've never seen it, never been to Italy, but there are supposed to be frescoes from the 14th century with very, very close pictures that resemble the Bracco.
Yeah.
Which was either the can't remember the other Spanish pointer, but all the same thing. Very, very long ears, a nose like Jimmy Durante on it. And so there's like, they've been pretty much breeding true to type for 600 years.
Yeah.
And the dog is very docile. It's like Ed's Labs. I mean, I told Ed, you know, watch my dogs. Well, what are they going to do? He says, you're right. He says, well, if you're out there having a smoke, just keep an eye. Like, yeah. They just come up. And I finally have this dog that's a pointing dog that acts like Ed's Labs.
Yeah.
They're like, hi. You know, they just come up. And now they would run out of the driveway. Like right now, if I let my dogs out.
They'd be gone.
They'd be not gone far, but they'd just be gone at this 100 or 200 yard range. And I'd have to be screaming and panicking and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're melt. The last lab. You know, Danny had that dog for a while.
Yeah.
Like, my brother Danny had a duck hunting dog recently. He went down to an adoption, like a dog. I don't know when all this, like, bringing human terms came to dogs. You used to go to the pound and get a dog. Now you're like, I rescued the dog. It's like,
I don't know.
What about all the, but people have been rescuing dogs all as long as people have been going to the pound and picking up a dog. So he went to a rescue place.
Right.
You know.
That is kind of weird.
The dog he picked out. His criteria for picking out a dog is it's just a building. It specializes in labs. It's a pound for labs. And he went in there And every lab in that room.
Lab rescue.
Yeah, lab rescue.
Lab rescue.
He went in there and every lab in the room except one stood up when he walked in. And he's like, I'll take the one that laid, that didn't get up.
Not sure if that's a good barometer or not.
It was a great dog. It was a great dog. It died just recently.
I met
it. Yeah, he was cool about it when it died, but a buddy of his was saying how he was real depressed, man, when his dog died.
Yeah.
Tig. Like Tig Welder.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like your kids.
Yeah, he thought so. All right.
We'll be right back to talk a lot more about labs and other hunting dogs. Spring is a great time to do something with your family. Do some spring cleaning, which I kind of started today outside, planning outdoor activities, which I'm always doing, taking a little trip to Hawaii with your kids for spring break, which I just did, which was great. You know what else you can do for your family this spring? You can shop for life insurance with Policy Genius. Make that part of your financial planning for the year. I've said it before a thousand times. I'll say it again. When my wife and I, when we started having kids, we got serious about life insurance. And man, I felt so much better after we did. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, it may not offer enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. So save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. I want to tell you about an American-made success story and Black Buffalo's award-winning nicotine pouches. Black Buffalo was built by dippers with decades of smokeless tobacco use. Black Buffalo is all about the history and tradition of dip, but they understand the convenience and discretion modern-day consumers are looking for. Black Buffalo's nicotine pouches give you the versatility to consume discreetly, but keep the ritual with flavors dippers love. Mint, straight, and wintergreen, all proudly made right here in the USA. Tell them, Chili.
The reason I like Black Buffalo pouches is, one, they're very discreet. And what I mean by that is I can throw one in and almost forget it's there. And I prefer the mint pouches.
So if you're 21 or older, consume nicotine or tobacco, and want to join the Black Buffalo herd, head over to blackbuffalo.com to learn more. You can order nicotine pouches online. They ship directly to most states, or check out their store locator to purchase pouches at thousands of retail locations around the country. Black Buffalo Tobacco Alternative, bold flavor, full pouches. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Black Buffalo products are intended for adults age 21 and older who are consumers of nicotine or tobacco. Being prepared is all about having the right tools. The OnX off-road map and navigation app is the best to find off-road trails and off-grid camping, and to use fully functional GPS when you're out of service. And as we all know, that being out of service is usually where the best places start. Plus, there's color-coded public and private land boundaries, which are super handy for finding off-grid camping. And I said it before, but I want to make sure it sticks. Offline maps. What this means is it allows you to access all interactive land and trail data and custom map markups when you're out of service. Just download the map ahead of time. Your phone's internal GPS gives you full navigation capabilities offline, so you'll always know where you are and how to get home safely. I've been using OnX for many years. I use it, I'm not joking, on a daily basis. There is zero hunting I do without OnX. Go to onxmaps.com and use code MEATEATER to get 20% off your membership today.
Speaking of labs, I want to tell one other lab story before we talk to Ed about labs for a minute, just to get the breakdown on labs, because, well, two things. The only dog I ever really liked, we had many, many dogs. Many of them would just vanish.
Like, oh, my dad was, just had that one lab that was there forever.
No, man, we had dogs. We had Mike, Kayla, Snoopy, and we had all dogs. I didn't even know what all dogs we owned, but they would never last. My dad would just get rid of them. One time, we were, this is awful to admit, and he's dead, so no one's can
prosecute
him.
Did he have him rescued?
Yeah, he had him rescued, like, from life. But we're going down the road one day, and we were going rabbit hunting. I was a kid. We're going rabbit hunting, and lo and behold, there's a beagle on the side of the road. That dog became our dog. I mean, it was like, what timing?
It was like,
he took that dog, and that dog was Bobo, was his name, and that dog became our dog. Just as simple as opening the door of the truck, and the dog called the dog into the truck.
Climbed we, right like, in.
Probably stole someone's dog, and then Bobo lived with us for a long time. Because my dad had a good beagle.
No collar, no tag.
I don't even remember.
You did. Just took it off its
ditch. He thought, he's like, we're going rabbit hunt. Apparently, here's this dog.
We should get a beagle.
So we had that dog. We had that dog for a while, Bobo, because it reminded my dad of a good, he used to hunt a lot of cottontails in
Illinois.
Yeah. But the one laugh story I want to tell is just funny as hell, and I want to tell just because Ronnie's here, is me and Ronnie went, I don't know how it happened, but we went on a guided, this is the first guided hunt I ever went on my entire life.
Yeah.
Went on a guided snow goose hunt for a couple days, in which I got one snow goose, I think.
And I got none.
And at a point, the guide, if you call him that, you know, we're out there at 2 a.m. because we have set out like thousands of decoys. And at one point, the guide goes to take, he goes to relieve himself. He goes to take a growler, and he goes just like right behind us. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can smell it. He's right behind us.
And the trees. The trees were only another 150, 200 feet.
Right behind us. And we're in layout blinds. Okay? And so you're just stuck in a layout blind. And after a couple minutes, here's his lab back there.
I know where this is going.
Right? Here's his lab back there. Toilet paper hanging out of his mouth.
Yeah.
You know? Cleaning up.
And
you're already stuck in these blinds. And in the lab all morning is going up and down the line of guys trying to kiss and lick everyone's face.
Because he's just friendly. He's been doing that all morning. But now we know what he was doing.
It'd be like,
he's like, tainted.
It'd be like, if a human being ate dog shit and it came up to you and said, give me a kiss. No, just give me a kiss. Just give me a kiss. Why? It's nothing. I ate it. Just give me a kiss. All morning long.
Yeah. Oh, God. And it didn't matter.
So Ed, you love Labradors.
I do.
And but. I do. Like, I do, too. I like them, too. But Ed Arnett, I know Ed from TRCP, Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. And we met, like, at things. Events.
Yeah, events.
Formal events. Not, I don't know, formal, informal events.
Media always summit talk and stuff, yeah.
You can go to a lot of hunting events and meet a lot of guys who don't do a lot of hunting. It's possible, you know. But and Ed and I hit it off. This is the first time we've actually gotten together to hunt. But I know that you, just judging by your trailer alone, you're a dog man. You got like a polished dog trailer. Have you always been into like retrievers, labs? Or did you do the whole pointer thing too?
I got an interesting story on how it happened because I really got into duck hunting when I moved to Oregon, and I've shot birds since I started hunting when I was 10 years old, but I never hunted with a dog.
What state were you born in?
Illinois.
Oh, really?
Well,
you've been out west for a long time, right?
Yeah, right out of high school.
Montana, Colorado, Texas.
I was cliche and went west as a young man right out of high school, Colorado, and then moved to Montana, Wyoming, Oregon.
Oh, so you've been all over.
Spent a good chunk of time here in Texas, and then now I'm back in Colorado, so. I never hunted with a dog though, or even anybody with a dog. And when I was going, we were talking today about, hunting, in the East Gallatin, hunting those spring creeks and jump shooting or hitting pheasants, but also jump shooting mallards. I'll just go pick up everything myself. And
or at least try to.
Or at least try to. That, exactly. Here comes the funny part of the story. So, so we'd go out, you know, the like the septic ponds that were out there in Belgrade?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And we'd go out there. You were talking about jump shooting some of those. We'd go out there and jump shoot those. I'd take a fishing pole and throw a big ass, you know, snagging hook.
Oh, to try to retrieve your ducks out of there.
Pull the ducks in if you didn't kill them on land. So you do that for a while and you think, boy, this seems silly. And then I got to Oregon and I went hunting with a guy. And he had Chesapeakes, and I really was impressed with how well-behaved the dog was and how great it was to have a dog going out and getting the birds and everything. So we hunted on opening weekend of, this was back in the 1991 or something. And so I go hunting after that opening weekend, and I put a stock on some mallards in a reservoir in Oregon, and I doubled on greenheads, and it was great, and they all fall out in the lake, and I'm like, all right, now how the hell am I going to go get them? They're right out in the lake. So I stripped down naked and I swam out and got those two mallards. And I said, I'm buying a freaking dog after this.
Yeah.
That's a true story. And I started looking and I went and got a lab that winter.
I totally understand it, man. Because the times I've hunted, like we used to jump shoot a lot of ponds in Michigan. And in Michigan, you have a lot of cattails around duck ponds, you know. And the problem with jump shooting ducks is like over decoys, they're coming toward you. And they usually land closer than where they were when you hit them, if everything goes right. Jump shooting.
Going away.
Yeah, they're already far away, and then they're going to be farther away by the time they land. And you got these seas of cattails.
Yep.
And you're like, bam, that thing starts going down, and it goes down. And you just get like a sinking feeling, like, I will never
find
that thing, man. You look and look and look. Then you go out there with a dog, and that son of a bitch just runs over and like sticks his head underwater and pulls it out. That made me a believer. Just not like if they made a dog you could put in a thing in your pocket and just get it out when you needed it and like put water on it and it turns into a dog.
Yeah. Chihuahuas aren't good retrievers.
No, they're not.
Well, I don't know how Ronnie feels about this, but with it, I can remember a handful of retrieves. Not maybe a handful, maybe two or three handfuls, but you remember the special ones?
I do too.
And to that point, I dropped a duck way back in a marsh. And I sent one of my females, she's gone now, but I sent her, and she went, and she came back. She hunted short, and I gave her back, and she went, and you can't handle a dog on a blind retrieve and that stuff. I mean, it was really thick and nasty. So I got her over the river, because she didn't mark this bird. I just gave her a hard back, and I let her go, and about 10 minutes later, she came back with that damn dog.
Desire takes over that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why I got it. That's how I got into it. And I didn't want a Chesapeake for no particular reason. I just liked labs.
A little bit of German wire hair personality issues.
Yeah.
Also. So when you're hunting, you mainly expect your dog to find downed critters.
No, I expect my dog to mark and go get it and then find cripples as needed. And if I need to, handle them to a blind on a blind retrieve.
But mostly after the shot's been taken.
That's correct. In a perfect world, you know, you want a dog that's in your blind, like Sage was today when we were hunting cranes. I took the dog today because we had good enough cover to hide it.
Yeah.
And he sat there nice and calm while those birds came in, and he didn't see a couple of them. But, you know, so we just lined him up and sent him out. But he marked a few of them, and then we walked over and picked up a couple. So
yeah.
But, you know, you want a dog for a retriever, you want a dog that sits there, you know, nice and quiet, obedient, doesn't, you know, break and run out when the geese are coming in or when you pull up the shotgun. You want them sitting there so they actually mark the bird when it falls
down. Have you always been into retrievers?
Yeah, that's the only
breed. What are the main kind of, are there more kind of retrievers than a lab?
Yeah, so if you go by AKC rules, if you will, the retriever breeds are Labradors, Golden Retrievers, Chesapeake Bay Retrievers. And then for the retriever hunting test, which I judge for.
AKC?
I judge AKC test.
And Ron, you judge for NAVDA.
And I have a question for you about that. There is an AKC equivalent for pointing dogs, correct?
Yeah, AKC has several tests that we transition right into.
Yeah.
Don't blend the water in with the test day.
Right.
Yeah. But they also have an AKC water test, like a little, just to show that your dog can go do water retrieves.
Right.
So, yeah, AKC covers a big gamut. They really do.
So the hunting test program started with NARA, the North American Hunting Retriever Association, and then NAVDA is the equivalent. So, you know, this was, you know, some old field trialer guys and duck hunters that kind of got together and said, you know, we just want to go out and test these hunting skills of these dogs. So they created this North American Hunting Retriever Association. And
how did you become a judge doing that?
Well, I just got into
putting your own dogs to it.
Yeah, exactly. I got my first dog after I did my famous swim after my two mallards. Got this dog and I started reading books. Started with Richard Walters, Water Dog.
Retriever. That book is everywhere, man.
Everywhere. Oh, yeah.
We had that dog because of our lab.
Absolutely.
And I'll say we wound up with a great lab because we lived by a Coast Guard station and a woman who was in the Coast Guard was getting restationed somewhere. She couldn't bring her dog. She put an ad in the paper, interviewed a bunch of people, came out to our house. We had kids. We liked to hunt. We lived on a lake. She gave us the dog, and that dog, we had that dog a long time, turned into just as far as obedience, the only problem is she was white, so it was hard to hide her in the duck woods. You're always putting, we always had those army, wool army blankets.
Cover her up, yeah.
Always trying to layer it on there, you know. But she would spot birds in the air that you didn't see yep. and had a noise she'd make in the back of her throat. And when she made that noise, there was a bird in the air.
She was like,
yeah. yeah. It was just like, yep, you knew, it was like, yep. there's a duck. She'd see it. And she would find ducks, and she'd find ducks you didn't shoot. You'd go out the second morning of season, waiting for it to get light out.
Get some of the cripples.
And you'd look, and she'd be standing there with a duck in her mouth, and the duck would be looking around. yep. Like she went and found some duck that wasn't even dead.
You what, know, you didn't
before it got right? light out, right. and she's standing there with it. Go she was a great them. Dog. She wound up
that's getting, the one you hunted the, like the most with.
Oh, that's the only dog we ever had legitimate
yeah.
hunt with.
Yeah.
Two things happened to her. One time we were on one of those floating land lakes.
Yeah.
You know, someone has the false
yeah,
bottom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep.
And we knocked some geese down in the early season in Michigan, and there's a wounded goose, very much alive, out on some floating land. And she swam out and climbed up on the floating land, but her four legs kept poked through. And that goose beat the shit out of her, man. Oh. And she would never touch another goose again after that. Yeah. The That's second bad thing that happened is she got hit by a van. We were out working on our BMX bikes. And I don't want to say who did it, but a guy down the road hit her in a blue van, carpet van, and busted her all up. We got a lot more years out of her. Eventually, she got where she couldn't even stand up. And then a friend of ours, Ben, took her out in Chippewa National Forest in the UP, and we had to dig a hole and shoot the dog down in the hole and bury the hole. It was just terrible. And I've never had another dog since then, you know.
Well, back to how I got into AKC judging. So I ran the hunt test after, when my dog became of age, and I wanted to do the hunt test. Field trials are very, as a handler, the hunt tests are very different than the field trialers, and the reason they put those programs together was to test dogs' hunting abilities. And
like for like in I want to get keep going but I want at the end of this I want you to explain like in you too I just don't want to forget to ask you this. Do you think that a test can you test the dog in a way that actually demonstrates how that dog will perform in the field? Just keep that in the back of your head.
Sure
but don't bet. Even do it now just remember later.
Well, I was really into this new dog I got, and I trained her almost every day. Didn't and you'd need to when they're really young. You
trained her with an eye toward the test.
Exactly. Well, with yeah, I kind of got into the test, but I, you know, everybody starts off saying I just want a good hunting dog,
or you go to a test sometime and you see a dog perform, you're like, I gotta have that.
Exactly.
I gotta yeah, have that.
I have a Nova, but I really want a Cadillac.
You know,
whatever. Pick your favorite.
Oh, I thought maybe you had a Chevy Nova.
Yeah, no. I mean, pick your favorite beater car, but mm-hmm. you want the Maserati when you see him run. And that so the field trials is different than the hunting test. The hunting test, you are judged against a standard. You right. set up a test, and if the dogs pass it,
no
they,
first, second,
they qualify.
Third place or nothing.
Field that's trials, the field test.
It's a hunting test. Again, under different field scenarios. In a field trial, it's a winner take all.
Right.
So
first, second, third placement.
Yeah. And some of these field trial dogs now, I mean, they'll mark readily out to 400 yards. That's not a realistic hunting situation.
Well, I mean, you but knock a bird down, he lands 400 yards away, and that dog's going to look at where it is?
If no, he can see it.
But or
if he
but
can
he could,
see it,
but
he could
be handled to 400 yards probably, couldn't he?
Right, but I, you know, if you were in a situation where you were high enough and the dog actually could see it, there are many dogs that could actually run out and mark it if they have been trained to deal with the terrain, the wind, all these factors that play in
mental thing, that mental memory, and that's what labs have. Labs have that marking memory. Like most pointing dogs, do not have that marking memory.
Yeah,
a lab will like you can, and you guys train it.
You train it.
You'll pull these different. Retrieves well. Your average dog, 99 of them are going to go get that last thing you threw.
Oh,
and you go no. You're going to go get the second thing I threw.
Yeah, you know. You remember that?
They can. Oh, Ed could talk. That. I mean, well, I did it with one dog.
Real quick, can you guys define mark?
Oh, go ahead. Sure. Marked retrieve is when the dog actually sees the bird or is supposed to see it.
Yeah.
And a blind retrieve is when they don't see the fall. And you give them hand signals. You send them on a. I send it on back.
You're guiding them, but he's
you're
blind.
Guiding them.
Yeah, he has no idea where the bird's at.
Yep. Exactly. So it's a teamwork. So
what's
you
the call when neither of you knows where the bird's at?
Lost bird.
No, I mean, but he might go out and find it.
That's somebody's got to mark it.
But you still roughly guided it.
Yeah,
I got you.
Well, you know, an ethical hunter will watch those birds until they're completely out of sight. Yeah. I've seen many that don't.
So you can give him an approximation of where it is, and he'll look around.
Exactly.
In
and if I don't think I could handle them to a bird, I don't send my dogs on very many blinds, quite frankly, in hunting situations.
Because you go over there yourself, too.
Go over there and get the dog on the bird and make sure you find it in the area of the fall. If it's practical to send them, I've sent them on several, but more often than not, you're walking them out there to find a cripple.
Well, like going after the cranes today, the dog just knew, though.
Yeah, he saw him.
Yeah. And also,
he saw him, or let me just fit it real quick, the one that Ronnie, you shot today and landed on the bank, he didn't see it, but I lined him up.
Right.
And I just lined him, and he could see it right there. So then when he saw it, I locked him, and I set him
But even
back.
If he couldn't have saw it, Ed lined him up, and he learns from that key of Ed's hand.
That's right.
You put your hand over the dog's head, and that dog's going
to
follow.
He knows he's supposed to look in that direction and pay attention. Yeah. He saw the bird laying there. Now, had he not seen it, I would have said back. And then when he veers off course, you hit him with a sit whistle. We give him a handle back.
So this is a quick question. Then I got some more, but just try to answer this as quickly as possible, because this is something I think a lot of people come up with, and you guys probably encounter all the time. Is like people, there are so many dudes out there who got a dog that was going to be like the big hunting dog, and it winds up not being, you know. And when that happens, I typically think, maybe the dog didn't have talent, but I typically think like they didn't have the time due to obligations or laziness. They didn't take the time to train the dog. Let's say a fella goes out and gets a puppy. What is the bare minimum days? Put it by in terms of days a week, days a month, whatever. What is the bare minimum you better be prepared to put into that dog when you bring it home to ever expect to have a dog that isn't going to embarrass you in front of your buddies, or that isn't just going to be a detriment to your hunting?
I think
probably more like hours a week.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And to me, it's more repetition than it is length of time. It's more short duration training sessions than a few long ones.
Yeah, that's so how I'm trying to teach my kid to shoot his bow, my 4-year-old.
If you did 15 minutes every day, exactly. No, that's much better than like one Saturday week. So, and it's particularly important, in my opinion, the first year is critical. I mean, little baby's brains are like a sponge, so's a dog.
Yeah.
And they want to work. They want to please you.
So how many hours a week? I know it's hard to answer that way, but what would you say?
I probably spent more than I should have, but it was probably 10 to 15 hours a week. Maybe.
Right. And then there's something some
dogs. Considerable investment, though.
Yeah. It's a considerable investment. If you want to train, if you want a basic, now back to your question, which was just
you don't
a basic
want to be embarrassed
obedience
by
dog.
It.
Yeah.
No, that's a bad
you
way
could
to put
get
it,
away with a half hour a day. So,
if you spend a half an hour a day, you're going to have the dog better than the guy who doesn't spend that half hour a day.
Yeah.
But one of the other biggest things that this is my biggest gripe with all dogs, and I'm sure Ed knows it too, is there's 7 inherited traits to a pointing dog, and I guess there'd be 6 to a flushing dog. There's desire, pointing, cooperation, tracking. That's embarrassing. I can't remember the rest of it.
Can't remember your principles.
But anyway, there's inherited.
Can we look it up for you?
My book's in the other room. There's inherited traits that this dog comes with in a package. And
inherited mean like out of the box.
Out of the box.
Right out of the mama.
And all you got to do is like expose it a little bit and just it's like, holy cow, my dog's holding point.
Oh, I'm with you now.
Where there's
you're
other dogs.
You're helping bring out stuff that's just there.
It's just there already.
Yep, and, that's right.
And
enhancing the instincts.
And so then the training, you could get one of those dogs out of a litter. It's just what we call a natural, like natural athletes in high school.
Yep.
The guy that could play all the sports, and I couldn't run.
Yeah,
they'd have called. Like they'd called me.
Yeah, it's like the dog. It's like the dog we're talking about. We cycled through as a family.
There you go.
Many dogs, and all of a sudden here comes this dog. Yeah. And no one knew anything about it. It was just like this dog. One cared what you thought about it, and two liked to find ducks.
So
and that's all we were looking for.
That's my hallmark for a dog. Is I can have a lower desire dog, but it's got to have a high cooperation.
Yeah.
And my wire hairs didn't have, well, one of them did, but most of them didn't. My short hair had, she was okay. But natural cooperation in a hunting dog is like an unspoken teamwork.
Yeah. Yep.
They gotta be
trainable.
You get they stuff from them. Then the training's easy because they're like, yeah. Oh, this isn't. There's dogs that I don't care who the trainer is, and you've seen people have made a lab get a title that don't deserve a title. You know what I mean? I'm sure you've
probably
seen
passed a few of them.
Oh, me too.
No, that, I've given them the title.
I've given a prize one dog, and I'm going, I wouldn't put that dog in my truck. But this guy has overwhelmed all the faults in this dog with obedience. This dog is just like on pins and needles.
Oh.
But yeah. he's masked it with obedience training. But if you can get a dog that's cooperative, that means he wants to work with you.
Yeah.
And like a little dog that
the teamwork's
gets
really
his
important.
First bird, and you get that puppy, he grabs a bird or whatever you throw, and he just brings it back to you. You're like, oh, we might have something here.
Yeah.
But the one that runs around the backyard and like you're going, ah! Even as a puppy, you're going, I got to work with this dog.
Yeah, and you have to work more.
So you're saying a guy can take the pep out of a dog by pushing obedience too much.
Oh, yeah. You can definitely do that.
And
act, their behavior can be different. They can turn into little assholes.
But some of them need more.
Oh, yeah, and then there's other dogs that are like that. And more like that kid that went to school that he did better at Catholic school than he would have done at public school because the nuns just got him every – and that's what dog training is, right? I mean, it's like timing. The Catholic nuns, I had all my friends went to Catholic school.
I want to mention, Ronnie, this is a digression. Then I want to get to some fast questions I want to answer. Ronnie, you're just not that old. But in his public school and swimming class, the boys all swam naked.
That's the next episode on this podcast we're going to go to.
It just sounds so long ago.
Yeah, we had that happen in Alaska. We had that whole big conversation. Yeah. Nobody believed it. But yeah, you're right.
I've never heard that.
No, they all swam. Swimming class,
Chicago
all the boys had to strip down and swim naked.
Chicago Public High School, boys had no suits. You swam naked. And when I went to...
I love that.
When I was being born the last day of October, second to last day of October, I was not as mature as the other boys.
Oh, yeah.
There was no hair down there. And it was really like...
You should have got a toupee.
That is a digression.
Yeah, that's a digression. But anyway,
back to this. Because I want to ask some rapid-fire dog questions.
So anyway... This is what I look for more in a dog, is that natural cooperation. Then it just makes the whole training thing easier.
Yeah. The dog wants to please.
You can screw it up, but it makes the whole thing easier. And it's easy to see in a puppy. You can see cooperation issues all the time in a puppy.
You can usually pick out the wallflower and the bull.
Right.
And then you want one in between. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want the
drive,
one that's like...
But
dependent on you.
Yeah.
You don't want the one that thinks, I'm the boss.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it's kind of like that finding a mate, too, man.
You might have something.
I might be honest. I should write a relationship book. No, Giannis, I want you to do something. I want you to role play. What are you doing on your phone there?
I'm trying to get a picture of.
Who's messing with their cord real bad? Is someone fiddling with their cord? Everybody hold dead still except Giannis. Now do what you were doing. Yeah, it's you. It's driving me nuts.
Sorry.
Not bad. Ed? A little bit. What are you doing on your phone? We're wasting time. I want you to role play as a dude who likes to hunt a little bit of everything, asking a question about what kind of dog he needs.
I can do that because I was actually doing that earlier today.
No.
Yeah.
You're a fellow like Giannis, lives in Bozeman, Montana. A lot of hunting opportunities. Upland, waterfowl, mountain lions.
I have two young kids.
Two young kids that he can't be having get killed by dogs. His wife's going to be really mad about that.
Police don't like it either.
Police don't like it. What dog does Giannis want? So I'm putting this to a pointer guy and a retriever guy, but you guys find consensus. You got to find consensus.
I think I want to interject one more thing.
A pointer guy has to. I think a pointer guy and a retriever guy are both chasing an ideal, right?
Sure.
A pointer guy dreams of that moment, right? And there's the dog locked on point,
right?
Shotgun at the ready.
The tail is just slightly
like a boner. Right?
That's his image.
Oh, super stiff. Not giving you a little flag.
Just really. Just
gotcha.
Not like flaccid. Just ready to rock. Yeah,
no flaccid weenies.
That's his image.
Yeah.
I think the retriever guy's image is his dog in flight out of the blind into the icy cold water. And he swims out and brings you the duck.
Yeah. That's a good visual.
I can see
that. That's your magazine
cover. That picture
covers.
I just got of my brother-in-law's chocolate lab, Sage, who's also named Sage.
Interesting.
Yes, she's female.
Let me look at this here.
But this dog...
These guys are shooting just drakes.
This dog sits on the bow, and when he calls that dog's name, that dog, with no running start, hits the water 15 feet out. I mean, it's... Pretty
time. Yeah, see that's the picture right there, man. I mean, it's like, yeah, Yanni's showing a picture. This is your brother-in-law down in Tennessee.
Yeah.
He's got a black lab.
Chocolate
lab. He's got a bunch of mallards hanging there.
Blowing Springs Kennels is where it's from.
That's where he bought it from?
Yeah.
As G. Gordon Liddy says, we're now going to take a break for crass commercial messages.
I want to tell you about an American-made success story and Black Buffalo's award-winning nicotine pouches. Black Buffalo was built by dippers with decades of smokeless tobacco use. Black Buffalo is all about the history and tradition of dip, but they understand the convenience and discretion modern-day consumers are looking for. Black Buffalo's nicotine pouches give you the versatility to consume discreetly, but keep the ritual with flavors dippers love. Mint, straight, and wintergreen, all proudly made right here in the USA. Tell them, Chili.
The reason I like Black Buffalo pouches is, one, they're very discreet. And what I mean by that is I can throw one in and almost forget it's there. And I prefer the mint pouches.
So if you're 21 or older, consume nicotine or tobacco, and want to join the Black Buffalo herd, head over to blackbuffalo.com to learn more. You can order nicotine pouches online. They ship directly to most states, or check out their store locator to purchase pouches at thousands of retail locations around the country. Black Buffalo Tobacco Alternative, bold flavor, full pouches. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Black Buffalo products are intended for adults age 21 and older who are consumers of nicotine or tobacco. Being prepared is all about having the right tools. The OnX off-road map and navigation app is the best to find off-road trails and off-grid camping, and to use fully functional GPS when you're out of service. And as we all know, that being out of service is usually where the best places start. Plus, there's color-coded public and private land boundaries, which are super handy for finding off-grid camping. And I said it before, but I want to make sure it sticks. Offline maps. What this means is it allows you to access all interactive land and trail data and custom map markups when you're out of service. Just download the map ahead of time. Your phone's internal GPS gives you full navigation capabilities offline, so you'll always know where you are and how to get home safely. I've been using OnX for many years. I use it, I'm not joking, on a daily basis. There is zero hunting I do without OnX. Go to onxmaps.com and use code MEATEATER to get 20% off your membership today. Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? And you probably got rain gear, but you shouldn't overlook sunny day gear. Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite Hoodie has you covered on the sunniest day. Man, I was just in Hawaii and I had my Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie with me. And here's the deal. We're in and out of the water all the time, getting in to go spearfishing, getting out, taking the kids to the beach. I'm not going to mess around all day putting sunscreen on, then having to get washed off. I just run a hoodie. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50, and it has airflow, so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head on over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all of their performance fishing gear.
All right, so there's Giannis, just moved, you know, young strapping lad, two young kids, just moved to Bozeman. He's got upland waterfowl. He says to Ed first, Ed, what kind of dog do I want, man? I just want a dog that's ready to roll. I don't even know what I'm going to be doing. Give him your pitch.
I'm willing to put some time in training.
He's willing to put a little money down. Not a lot. He don't want to spend more than $1,000.
Well, he still owes you $1,000.
Well, he owes me $1,000 for the bet. Let's just also add this. I excuse him of his debt of $1,000.
Then I'll give him a dog.
And he doesn't want to spend any more than that. He doesn't want to spend any more than that on a dog. And that's absolute top limit. He'd be a lot happier to spend $300-$400.
Well, you can't do that.
Okay. $1,000. Okay, well, let's start with this. What's his budget?
I'm smart enough to know that what I'm getting into is going to cost a little bit of money. Just like you don't go buying cheap rangefinders.
Right.
You got to spend a little money on
it. So that's first question.
It's also a 10 to 12 one word year answer. Commitment.
What's his budget if he's smart?
His budget should be $1,000 minimum.
Yeah.
Ed?
$1,000.
Okay, so now
that's what I'd sell my puppies to you for.
Yeah. All right. So Giannis, again, we already know his credentials, says to you, ask him, just say it right now as your role play.
Ed.
Can you do it in Latvian?
Nah.
That's my name in Latvian?
Nee. I love it.
See.
Yeah, is what you're supposed to say.
Yeah.
I'm looking for a dog that can really do everything, as well as come inside at the end of the day, hang out with my girls, and be a family dog. I can put in 10 hours a week with it.
That's great.
Train it.
You're going to take that
That's
time.
A lot of time.
But that time comes away from your dog.
10's right? A lot of time. But
no, we're going to do it together.
15 minutes a day, be best he's going right. to get.
He's doing it with his children, so you're not like messing up
the first
up his...
year, we can't do it?
Oh, you could. If you're home enough, you could do an hour a day. But you know what? Not to stop the question, but you also got to remember, a young dog, you don't do an hour a day.
No.
You do it in little segments. 5 minutes here, 10 minutes here.
Three or five, 15 minutes.
Then
sessions.
It becomes longer and longer.
And when I said okay, 10 let's to keep 15 hours,
fast, this yeah. is, I want to get okay. to, I want to, I want to, okay. I want to get this, there.
Course, here's my bias.
Here's your,
yep. It's a biased answer, but the Labrador Retriever is without exception one of the best dogs for all around hunting conditions, and they're really great family dogs.
But it can't find birds. It can't find pre-shot birds. It can't find alive birds.
Oh, sure.
Say that again.
I'm not following that.
Yeah.
They won't go out and find birds before you shot them.
Yeah, because you got under the retriever side of it.
So you feel like they're pretty reliable at finding birds.
The dog that you hunted, that I hunted with today, my Sage, that is one of the better pheasant labs I've ever had.
Finds them all.
I have killed
and it's not flushing them 75. I'm playing the devil's advocate.
No. I keep that dog within 30 yards.
The dogs are divided into flushing.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
Oh, okay. No. He's a good upland dog. You have to train him on all of this stuff, but they're good in the duck blind. They're good on upland, and they're great with the family.
But let me put what he will not do.
He won't point, but there are pointing labs.
But you know what? I found
we don't want to go there.
Yeah, I know.
Labs will, in some way, once you get in tune with their body language, will in their own inadvertent way alert you to the presence of a bird.
Sure.
Who did I tell the story
to? He's trying to find it, but you know by his body language that something's up.
It's getting close. Yeah. It's getting close.
I think I told you last night on the way back about Sage and the last two roosters. Yeah. He was telling me they're right here.
Ed was out hunting. He got real sick of walking and kind of stopped. His dog looked back from him from the top of the hill, kind of being like, you have to be kidding me. You have to come up here. This is so exciting. And he goes up there, and there's two pheasants.
But this is the problem with the flushing breeds versus the pointers. I ran my ass off chasing that dog because he's really good on runners, and he was chasing a running cockbird.
Right.
And so if you want to put your tennis shoes on and chase a flusher after birds, otherwise you do it gentlemanly and go to the point. So
I got to say, I almost don't want a lab just because not everybody, I know somebody that doesn't have a lab.
Well, you're Latvian. You don't want a common dog.
Everybody's got a lab.
What do they run in Latvia?
I have no idea. I'd look that up.
Kurs.
Kerr hounds. All right, so
something that runs pigs.
You already know the question, so there's Giannis. He's going to give you an abbreviated version of the question in Latvian.
Tell me why.
Lana, Donna, Lana. Mēs šodien šorīt kamēr mēs medījām sandhill cranes,
I would say that what you need. No, if I was going to sell my breed of dog to you, I would say the shortcomings in my dogs would be.
Ooh, that's tactful. Start with the shortcomings. Because then he's going to close in with a big sell.
You live in Bozeman, Montana, and if you are going to do a fair amount of winter waterfowl hunting, then you don't want one of my dogs. Because you're going to have to put a vest on. It has a very short coat. I do have one male that goes through Cedar Creek
all
the time. Walks that creek.
But that creek runs through my veins, man.
He walks right up to January 1st when we have to quit. He walks that creek. Doesn't get cold. But most of them, they're going to be shaking like a...
And that's a cold-ass place, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, ducks show up there really good in December, and that stuff's frozen.
My thing would be, like, if you think you're going to do more duck hunting, then you want to get something with a really good coat, and you can't get a better coat than a lab. Maybe a Jesse. I don't know. I think it's... If you really get a good lab coat...
Jesse's are top duck dog, no doubt.
Yeah, but I mean...
They're warmer than a lab?
Yeah, they're denser, I think, probably. But I think... I'm kind of digressing here, but what Ed faces and a lot of pointing breeds face is so many people have bred these dogs without the concern for coat and conformation. You're getting labs that don't have a good coat.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So,
because they've been breeding them as house dogs.
House dogs and show dogs and everything else. Yeah. And so that makes a difference. But the breed I have now, the Bronco Italiano, it's a couch potato. You'd find upland birds with it. You could jump shoot ducks. You could go out, break some skim ice, shoot a few birds, put a vest on it. But if you're going to really be out in the cold a lot, I would go with a dog with a better coat. Either another versatile dog, if you wanted a pointer, or a lab. And we kind of both kind of laughed about the pointing labs as Ed, Ed's been around them for years, I'm sure. And in NAVDA, our kind of joke is when somebody says, well, are pointing labs ever going to come into NAVDA? And one of the leaders of our group goes, a pointing lab is a fault. It's a flushing dog. Why would you want a pointing dog that didn't hold point?
Yeah.
Why would you want a flushing dog that stops in the middle of what he's doing?
Well, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it'd be like if you met an exotic dancer who's a good cook.
It's a good analogy. You know,
my very first lab, actually, I wouldn't say she was a pointer by any means, but, you know, she got up on the bird, and she knew it was there, and smelled it, so I just tell her to stay.
Right.
I'd walk up and just say, get him, and she'd dive in, and birds would come up.
I would love to have one of those.
Yeah.
You know,
but she was a flusher. Plain and simple, I would never call her a pointer.
People have started to try to just make this new breed of pointing labs. And I don't know how Ed, how do you feel about it? Like when somebody
How long have we been going for?
53. And I got a bonus question.
We got a bonus question, and you got to give me the pitch. And he wrote down a question that he hasn't answered yet.
Okay. Anyway, my pitch would be if you wanted a pointing dog that would be a great family dog, I'd have to agree with my breed of Bronco Italianos or possibly some Griffon, wire-haired pointing Griffon, maybe a Vizsla, back to the short-haired. Those breeds are the other two are kind of popular, but they're a little bit more on a docile side. A German wire-hair is a little crazy, a German short-hairs, Weimaraners. And again, if people hear this, they're going to go, oh, you son of a bitch. I'm saying just in
because general, people will fight. It's like arguing over rifle calibers.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whether a 20 gauge is better than a 12 gauge.
There's going to be 20.
Everybody's got to breed.
I've been on websites where people defend pit bulls. Now, I'm sorry, I don't want one next to me. I know there's some sweetheart pit bulls out there. I just don't want one next to me.
Yeah.
So when I say general statement, you'd want one of the more docile pointing breeds that are known for being a little more laid back, you know.
With the family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to run big CRP,
but you're not giving a good sell. You've devoted a huge portion of your life to these dogs, and you're basically telling a guy, "I'd go get a lab."
But no,
if you want one, get a docile one.
No, I
know there's more in you because if it wasn't, you wouldn't have. this is all you've ever been like, yeah, like
since you know me.
When you're not, besides your work and your family, this is what you love, and you're not telling the boy.
Yeah, but see, I don't like hard sell a dog. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. You got too much. Yeah, it's too much morals and stuff.
Yeah, it's just like.
Well, it just depends on what you want.
Right. I would just that's it's just not the right question to ask me because I want more information about what you want and I'm gonna say hey I'll tell people I don't think it's for you.
You said all around.
Yeah,
you said,
no, I'm with you.
When you say all around, that and here's means my all bonus kinds question. Of hunting and
it will make it all around. My bonus question is: you all know I'm much more of a big game hunter than I am small game, waterfowl, birds, whatever. So I don't even know if it's legal in Montana. You can't do it in Colorado. But if I had a
trail of wounded animal, a dog, you know, in Montana, I don't know. Michigan, you can.
Michigan, you can.
I think you used to not be able to, then all of a sudden became able to recently.
Yeah.
Somewhat. I think I totally, if you've, I know it's hard to figure out, if you've hit and wounded a dog, or hit and wounded a, not a dog, hit and wounded a big game animal, I think that anything you can throw at it to find it, you should be able to throw at it to find it. And I haven't heard both sides of the story. Maybe there's a great argument why not. I just don't see, like, how would the retrieval of game ever be a negative? I just can't picture it.
I agree.
Well, the reason it's illegal is because, right, but the reason it's legal is because people would run them.
Yeah, I know. You're heading people.
That's
yeah,
the problem.
You're heading off abuse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like it's so hard to discuss laws and legal stuff. Like, my brother has a rule that when he discusses this stuff, he's talking about what's the goal of the legislation rather than how people are going to get around it. And so I support the goal
and
of it.
And personal ethics here.
Yeah, I support the goal of it. Like,
that's we a good way find, to think about we it. We want to find that
Yeah, first that and animal. Foremost, if someone needs find to retrieve that deer, what is going to help them retrieve that deer?
And look, that dog's not going to be with you on that bow hunt. You're going to, let's say...
You're not using the dog to help you on the bow hunt.
No, you let's say you make a, you know, your shot's not quite right on. You're not going to spend a day, 24 hours looking for it, exhausted, and go, okay, it's time to go home and get the dog because all we got is pin drops for, you know, half a mile.
Well, if I was going to speak to what you're looking for then, and I know labs are used for tracking. I mean, they can do a great job of tracking.
They'll find a wounded
deer. You can train them, though, you really wanted to.
Right. They can certainly do it.
Yep.
But the versatile breeds, again, this would not be maybe my breed, although I have one guy that works for Bear Archery that tracks a bunch of deer with his dog all the time.
With a Bronco.
And, but some of the versatile breeds, tracking recovery of crippled game was their biggest.
Leashed.
That was their barometer. There's an old saying when it comes to pointing breeds, the Germans want a tracking dog that will point, and the Americans want a pointing dog that will track. So,
can I cut in real quick? Montana, it's legal to track with a leashed dog. Which I think is pretty good. That's a great compromise.
That's a smart. Yeah,
it's a good compromise. Yeah. In fact, most states, I think it's leash. Most states.
That's reasonable. He's not gonna be out killing other stuff.
Yeah. Now is that reasonable to ask that of the dog? Can you pull it off?
Absolutely.
On a leash?
Oh my god! Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's where it comes into the demeanor of not being, you know, crazy. It's like, okay, and you train them that way. You train them on the leash. You do blood
drops. You train them so they know what their job is. That's
and
exactly right.
So they just know, like, that leash is not a big deal. I know I'm pulling my dad along, but he's not going crazy. And, yeah, I've seen dogs do. I have that one wire-haired black one in Haskell we talked about. He tracked several deer. He killed a couple deer.
So to the point of being able to...
Have your pants over here, Mike. Oh, he's got him.
We are in a small house in Western Texas, and
one of the cameramen is mooning us right now. Earlier, Steve asked him if his buttocks hurt.
All right, so just to wrap, I want to wrap a couple things up. Your bonus question is taken care of?
Ed should answer it briefly.
What was the question?
He also loves big game.
Yeah, I love big game, and right. You know, it'd be great if my dog, if I could train my dog to do that.
Oh yeah,
and you just said that.
If he
you can train him to do anything. Just a quick side note: the dog we hunted with today, Sage, I actually trained him to find dead bats and birds under wind turbines. I used to do research on windmills and fatalities.
Was that right? Where were you doing that work?
Mostly back east in Pennsylvania.
So you'd go into big wind farms to see if they are knocking birds out.
If they killed bats and birds. Mostly bats, but birds as well. But I actually trained him, and I got him trained in 5 days, and he'd go out and in our trials, he found over 80% of the trial bats.
Really?
So we were pretty confident that he was doing to good.
But retrieve.
Exactly. Right? It's the desire to find something.
You just turned it. You've channeled it.
And I'll tell you how we did it.
Channeled it.
Yeah, exactly. I just took the bats, some frozen bats, and I'd set them out there somewhere.
Who doesn't have
and
a frozen
bat? And when he actually
bat?
Found them, well, let's not get into that.
Yeah, I know.
So and when he found it, I'd give him a food treat, and I'd throw it. But more importantly, I'd throw him a bumper. The yeah, retrieve is the ultimate.
Oh. Yeah.
So then
you reward him with being able to do a retrieve.
And then you just phase out. And this is with any kind of training. You just phase out of that after a while. Then
less reward.
The game or the command work. Or whatever it is becomes the reward.
Right.
Yep. My buddy Brant, who I mention often, did the same thing. He's a researcher like yourself. Yep. Trained his dog to find nests.
I had one. Oh,
that dog got very good at finding
my very first
nests,
one.
Which he said are fact, if you don't have a dog out there and you don't have a hen who's wearing a tracker.
Yep.
It is extremely difficult to find duck nests in high grass. And he just knocked it out of the park finding them with that dog. Yep.
I did the same thing with my first lab.
She wouldn't get there and destroy the eggs.
Yeah.
She'd get there and be like, right here.
And right here it is.
And that's, yep. The same note, that's why they do all the banning of woodcock and grouse with pointing dogs.
Is that right?
Because when they come into the scent,
he won't get in there and crush it.
Right.
Yep.
So it's like, can't move. And you're right there with the dog. Tell the dog to whoa. It's got to be trained dog. Then you can do all the work with the eggs or the.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to your bonus question. Yeah. You can train these dogs to do those things.
But what dog more out of the box is going to want to do it? Probably some kind of, it'd probably be a bloodhound, right? It'd be like a lion dog.
That would be their instincts, dog, yes. Right.
That would be, I would say, yeah. If all you wanted to do was track, problem is with the hound group, you want to say bloodhound. Very few bloodhounds ever get in any competition and are trained for tracking anymore. It's a great old dog. But they're not real active. Then if you were to
how
try
are
to get,
they as family dogs? Just quickly,
a bloodhound. I've never had one in the house. I don't know. I think bloodhounds
have no experience with that.
Yeah, but I know the other dogs that would track better and faster would be your blue ticks and your all the coon dogs, the bear.
Cur.
But they.
It's my sales pitch.
They don't listen good. They're very independent.
Who's this now?
Bear dogs and coon dogs.
Oh, yeah.
That you were lying them to
Floyd's
be independent.
Lion dogs? Floyd's lion dogs would kill you.
Really?
They like to hunt lions. And they got to fight lions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those dogs are ready to fight. One dog will go fight a lion.
Wow.
It's like he would rather die than pull out of the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never seen
those a lion. Dogs do not snuggle.
Yeah, see, my dogs
probably just don't want that one for your kids.
Really, and it sounds like I'm being like
Floyd would die if he knew I was saying that his dogs would kill you. I don't mean they kill you. I'm just saying like those dogs think about one thing. They think about their group dynamic, which is very complex because there's a bunch of them. You know, you're running like you got a dozen dogs or whatever.
Right.
They think about
so they got that pack
what
mentality.
They got going on.
Yeah,
and then they think about how does that relate to catching lions. You know. Yeah.
And that's not a dog you want for the house.
No.
So really, I think it's if you want to concentrate on blood tracking, I would say pick one of the versatile breeds because it's probably more in the gene pool. But I also know that my new son-in-law, his family in Pensacola, Florida, they have a hunting camp in Alabama, and their two blood tracking dogs are their labs. So I mean,
really? Are they good at finding deer?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. And then
will they find pigs?
I don't think they've ever done it, but that's the guy that bought the dog for me and became my son-in-law. And so he ran his Bronco with the labs, and now his Bronco's tracking blood. So,
I mean, I've never trained one to track big game, but I'm sure you can do it.
Yeah,
because the way I train for trailing for pheasants is you buy a pin-raised pheasant and you kill it and you drag it.
Right.
Oh, and you drag it through a field and you plant it somewhere where where you know it is, and you get the dog out and put him on the scent.
Right.
And work him until he finds it.
You know what's kind of I don't mean to offer this as a wrap up, but what's interesting is the first time I ever went hunting pigs with dogs, they had classic trackers, you know, like hounds.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had pit bulls
in Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they had pit bulls. I think they were pit bulls.
Or they look like a pit bull.
Yeah, some sort of terrier. That they had a dog that would track the pig.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'd have a dog that would catch the pig and anchor it. And these dogs knew to grab that pig by the ears, and they would hold that thing to the ground.
Right.
So the dogs worked in tandem.
Come hell or high water.
And these guys, like, that's just how you do it. Then I later did that in New Zealand, and they had a dog that looked like a toned-down greyhound. And they even had Whippet in them. They bred Whippet in them for speed. And these dogs were great pig hunters, but they wouldn't actually fight the pig. They would just harass
the pig. They couldn't manhandle the pig.
They would not anchor a pig.
Yeah.
They would harass it and corner it and keep it busy while you went and caught up with it.
Yeah.
The end result is you got to get in there and fight the dog. You got to fight the pig a little bit more.
Right.
But that little thing would dip. The third time I ever went and did this was in Florida, what Giannis was talking about earlier. Whole other deal. Whole different kind of dog. No pit bulls, no whippets.
Well, what was it?
They were hounds. Some kind of smaller hound dog.
But they had one big, can't remember her name, but there was that one big cur that looked like it.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, remember that big?
Remember the dogs that all got in the huge fight with the raccoon? I remember the dog.
She was in there.
That boar charged that dog and laid it open good.
Yeah. And they had small, those dogs were small, most of them.
Like,
yeah.
40 pound or?
No, probably bigger than that.
50 pound?
Yeah, maybe 45 pound. 40, yeah. Yeah, probably 40.
But there was one that was like a 70, 75 pound.
I don't remember that
big
dog.
Big chested.
Was that the one that got ripped open by the pig?
No, I think it was one of the little ones.
What's funny about this guy, what?
No, he said big chested.
Oh. This guy, his dog gets, you know, he's got dogs. They're getting fights with pigs all the time.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, man, I said, what's your vet think? You guys bringing in these cut up dogs. Does your vet think that it's like, does he get mad at you like it's abusive to put these dogs in these situations? He goes, no, I went and found a vet that likes to hunt pigs.
I like that. That would certainly help.
Yep.
That would help.
All right. Where are we at with time? We should probably.
We're there.
All right. So the logical conclusion of this is you need to go buy a Brocco Italiano in a lab.
Breed them.
You need a budget of, what do you need for a budget?
They're a little pricey.
Ron has a thing.
Pricey.
Ron's got a dog that's a fat, like, you're not going to take offense by this. You got a dog that's a fashionable dog. Not fashionable. It's unknown.
It's rare.
And people want it for novelty. Yeah. And he has even sold dogs, a handful of them, more than a handful of them, to people who have no intention of hunting that dog.
Right.
How can you do that?
Well, it's easy. It's called $2,500 for a 8-week-old puppy that just says,
I did the same thing when
there's
I was
breeding. Yeah, no one knows if it's any good or not.
About
no.
3/4 of my dogs.
But you got to realize.
Half went to pet and family.
Answer me this. How many labs do you think are in this country?
Lots. I have no idea.
How many people?
Millions.
How many people per family? Just divide that by.
Okay. So let's just say right
now. How many
now,
American families
right
are there?
Now, there's labs probably, I'm going to say there's 5 million labs in this country. Or let's just say 1 million. That's a safe number. There's 300 million people. Let's just say 500,000. I'll bet you.
I can look it
only,
up. Well, yeah, well, it doesn't you, matter. It was a bunch
I'll bet
of,
you only 2 to 3% of them ever put a duck in their mouth.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
It's the same way.
When if some, that. If that.
If yeah. If that. So same thing. This is a very esoteric dog. It costs a lot to import them. It costs a lot to. The price is going to come down, and they're all going to. They're all going to come down to the price. But right now, there's somebody who don't know shit from pudding. I sell them for $2,500.
So you don't feel any kind of moral thing where you got to make sure they're going to hunt that dog?
No, I push them in my registry, in my breeding contract. If they ever want to breed this dog, then they have to do all the things I do. They have to do a NAVDA test.
Yeah.
They have to have health tests, hips, eyes, x-rays, everything. And I'm like, okay, then you're just as new as I was 25 years ago. But you're going to do what I do. And if they do that, and the dog's got to pass a hunting test, this dog's got the ability to do it, and I'm fine with that.
Did you hear about what happened to Matt recently? He bought a guy gave him a cow that for some reason was assumed to be infertile.
Oh, yes, I did hear that. Yeah.
And then I don't know how it happened. Someone brought a bull over, and... But this is my brother. Someone brought a bull. And I could be mutilating this story, but the basic gist is a guy gives him a cow that's supposed to be not viable, infertile. Somehow a bull comes over. Turns out the cow is not, in fact, infertile. has a calf. Matt decides to get out of the livestock business and takes his cow-calf pair down to sell them at an auction. Gets in a little trouble with the brand inspector who wants the brand papers. Matt has no idea what he's talking about because the guy just gave it to him. Because
he's never had cows before.
Winds up, he has to go to the guy that gave him the cow. The guy that gave him the cow is not happy because he has like a protected bloodline, right?
Right.
Like a name he's got to defend, right? Mm-hmm. He's got a reputation. And here he gives one of his cows to someone who just like goes and breeds it with some bull down the road.
But he was told it was not viable.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I know. But anyways, he had to go talk. He had to get himself out.
I can see that getting messy.
So
I can see that getting messy.
The long and short of the story is he was impressed by beef prices.
That's a good way to wrap that up.
He's out of the stock business now, but he was in it pretty thick for a couple days there. So Ed, budget, dog budget.
If you get really high-powered field trial bred dogs, they're going to push.
By that you mean 2,000
field high field. Those the sire or the dam or both have titles. Field trial champions.
Right. So he knows a good smart. And the mom and dad went to Harvard.
Exactly. It's Cadillac, the Maserati. But you know, a good average hunting dog is going to be $1,000 usually minimum, $1,000-$1,500. I think the key thing to look for. When I was breeding readily through brown dog retrievers, when I had my kennel, my advice to people, if they couldn't afford it, it's like, that's fine. But if you buy one out of the paper for $300 or $400, make sure it's got the health guarantees.
Right.
A good breeder is going to give you, you know, is going to have all the certificates you need. Yep. They're free of even all good, known congenital good diseases, good hips, good elbows, good eyes, good all that stuff.
And they will give you. Breeder should do that now.
Yeah, that's right. And they will give you a certificate that if there's any of those problems that show up congenitally if, over a certain time, I mean, you don't wait for hips to, right. you know, show up with a 12-year-old dog with bad hips and say, I want a puppy.
It's called arthritis.
Exactly. But that's what you're really looking for. And to get a good, well-bred dog with the traits you want, good health certificate, you're looking at $1,000.
I'm going to ask you another really tough question. Let's say you go down, like my brother went to a lab rescue place.
Right.
Basically randomly selects a dog. If you had to put it in percentage points, what are the odds that he's going to walk out of there? He just goes in. There's 10 dogs in there. He randomly selects a dog. Don't factor in health. Okay, we'll just make an assumption about health. What are the chances he's going to come home with a hunting dog that'll make him proud? Versus he gets one whose mom and dad are all the stuff you're talking about.
I think he's got a good chance, I'm going to say, probably maybe 75% that the dog wants to do the work, but he's going to have to put the work into it to train it to do it. So he doesn't embarrass his
buddies.
That's the pound puppy. They've got the instincts. If it's a purebred lab, they're all, I mean, it's on a gradient, right? You know, they're not all good.
Right.
And some of them are great. To your point, you know, you pull one out of the lab or the rescue and you get a really good one. That's because he has the drive and the instincts. He may have been pretty well bred.
So he's got a 75 with a pound puppy. What's he got with a dog who's got some
credentials? I'm saying with instinct that would actually 75
he's got instincts, whether or not you screw it up or not.
Exactly. Yeah. He's got to train that in. Maybe that drops to 25% depending on
you know what?
If you're buying one from a lab rescue, it might drop to 25% real quick.
When Ed said that, it reminded me of saying a guy told me years and years ago. When you talk about dogs, well, it's the best dog. Breed best to the best. Don't always breed best to the best. You gotta say this dog's got a fault, that dog's got a fault. Yeah, but they're both great. No, they both got a serious fault. And the same fault can repeat itself. There's an old saying. The best boxer, heavyweight, lightweight, middleweight boxer, never stepped off a porch in his life, never stepped into the ring. He just didn't box.
No one knows.
So you get that dog like you guys got. That dog wasn't trained by any handlers. That wasn't trained by any nothing. And that could have been one of the best dogs in the world.
Yep.
And through great dogs.
Yeah.
You just never know. So you never know who's... You just don't know.
I think what you're buying.
But you got to answer the second part.
Okay.
What are this dude's odds if he goes through the whole, jumps through the hoops, buys like a dog with all the paperwork, diplomas, or the mom and dad have the paperwork?
Better than average?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're already better than average. You said 75%.
That was instincts.
Okay. This is the last thing we're going to talk about. I want to re-ask the question. You got a guy. He has everything it takes as a beginner trainer. He's going to go into the pound and get a dog, and he's got the time. He's got the time that is necessary to put into it. What are the odds he's going to pull a good dog versus what I'm trying to get you to answer? You know what I'm trying to get you to answer. Does it actually pay? Is it actually worth your time to look and be like, who were the mom and dad, all that garbage? Is it just like, is it just random, or do you really get something when you get that?
Now I'm going to maybe drop it to 50-50.
But, you know, the reality is I think most of the labs have good instincts, but not all of them are going to be hunters right out of the box.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're, it depends on their age, you know, the old dog, new trick thing. I mean, you can train old dogs, but your best bet is to start with a young dog. And train.
So you
and,
didn't put you an know, age in that puppy.
No, right. Yeah.
So if you had to get one that was old, one that was a puppy, you'd always go with the puppy.
Yeah, I would. I would if I was going to train one. Yeah. If you go down to rescue a six or eight year old lab, they're kind of set in their ways, and
you're probably getting a house dog.
Yeah, probably. Let me qualify those percentages.
You're not really comfortable answering that question.
Well, it's
too much unknown.
I'm such a classic scientist. It just depends, you know.
Yeah. I can give you a little antidote. My brother-in-law, who owns Sage, we just saw pictures of, who was a or is a $2,000-plus puppy. I don't know exactly what he pays. I know that she just got bred at 6 years old for the very first time, and he's expecting, you know, to make some dividends. His first lab that he trained very hard was a rescue pound dog, Bonnie. Amazing dog. Love that dog. He had no idea. They just grabbed her. He put the time in, and it was an amazing lab.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go. He got both of them.
All right. Yep. But you could spend that kind of money and, you know, for come a real high-powered lab and come out with nothing. And
so. This is that. Oh, go ahead. I know it's late, but there's also, if you want to buy a dog, I think one of the best ways to do, if you can do it, if it's in your budget, you're ready to spend $1,000 or $2,000 on a dog, go meet the parents of those dogs. Spend some time with that breeder. And then, because if there's something you don't like about either of them dogs, you might get that in your puppy.
Yeah.
So that, but it's hard to do these days. These dogs get sold on the, you know, through the internet. I have sold dogs from coast to coast, north to south.
You Canada, deliver your dogs?
Most of them.
I shipped one to Greece.
Did you?
Really? I did. Yeah. A gal from Mykonos Island in Greece.
I say the same thing about spouses. You know, I've been married for a long time. People ask me, you know, advice. I'm like, dude, go hang out with the parents, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? He says,
I don't know if people say that, but if you don't like your mother-in-law,
you're marrying them all. Good chance
I just can't picture it. I can't picture it. If someone had went and said, like
before you decide.
No, someone went and said to my wife, oh, go hang out with Frank and Rosie, and you'll find out what it's like to be married to Steve. I just don't see how you'd ever get the...
I got to give you that. I think you got to just find, like, it'd be the idiosyncrasies. It's not the real person, but it's a good point. You and Frank are not the same.
We both like stuff real organized.
That's true.
And not a lot of garbage, like spent shotgun shells all over the floor and stuff like that. Ronnie thinks cup holders are little things that hold empty shotgun shells.
No, one is for non-spent. Yeah, it's for spent.
That's right.
Or maybe a mix.
The console is for unshot. The little door holders are for spent shotgun shells. All right, we got to go. This is actually like a two-part podcast because we're going to do part two.
Later? Some other time?
No, we're going to do it real soon. And we're going to talk about why we're here, which is the real tall bird with the real good meat. We're going to pick that up. And hopefully we're going to bring in another guy who shot a mountain of these tall, good-to-eat birds. Hopefully this is all going to happen. I think it's going to happen. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us. Tune in more. Also, this is Meat Eater, the podcast. You can always, always, always watch Meat Eater, the TV show, by getting yourself access to the Sportsman Channel or go to Meat Eater. I can never remember how that goes. Is it VHX TV or TV.VHX? Hold on a minute. Don't go anywhere. It's, I really need to commit this to memory. 1 minute. My buddy set this thing up, and it's not. I'm sure it's. Oh, man. Just stay tuned here a minute. Meateater.gov. Go to meateater.gov. Oh, I'm not connected. Something happened to my thing. Come on, help me out, man. Someone. I can't believe you guys aren't being helpful.
I don't have a phone with
me. We are. We're not busting your balls about what's going on. Think.
Okay. Nope. Go to, I'm going to commit this memory right now. Think of this. TV comes last in life. Okay. With that thought, meateater.vhx.tv. Meateater.vhx.tv. You can go there to stream and download episodes, watch to your heart's content. There's a code you put in for a discount. Try Meat Eater Podcast, but that might not be it. All right, everybody. Stay tuned.
Love you.
Ron loves you.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store, or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.